Happy Friday, Golden Bears, and welcome to another episode of the CSP Bears Podcast. I'm your host, Tanner Peterson, and if you can't tell by the tone of my voice, I'm excited that you're joining me for today's fun episode. It's been a while since we last recorded, but if you remember our previous episode about a month ago, I sat down with Isaiah McKay, a senior on the men's basketball team. That was a really enjoyable episode as McKay and I discussed how he ended up back in the Twin Cities and what it's like being a leader on the Golden Bear men's basketball team. But this week, I'm thrilled to be joined by a man who wears many hats here at CSP, an individual who has guided the athletic department for the past 3 years. I'm pleased to welcome Mark Lunch McKenzie. Welcome to the podcast, Lunch.
Thanks, Tanner.
Lunch took over as athletic director duties in 2016, and during his tenure, he was a key part of the rebranding and growth of the athletic department, as well as building the Athletic Performance Center. Along with that, Lunch has continued to lead the baseball program to where he's been the head coach since 2000, accumulating a record of 435 wins, 334 losses, and one tie. Lunch recently announced that he'll be retiring as athletic director position effective August 1st of next year. But Lunch, I want to get into here how'd you get to CSP in the first place?
Well, interestingly enough, everything I have is a long story, but I don't have a college degree. Mm-hmm. I was a laborer and a block layer. I worked for the Minnesota Twins. I worked for the Vikings. And I coached everything I could out in Minnetonka. I started coaching when I was actually 15 years old. I was coaching 9-year-old baseball. And we had I don't know how far into the story you want me to go, but
go all the way in.
We had two junior highs out there. Still do. But high school was 10 through 12. Now it's 9 through 12. And I actually went to a parochial school through 8th grade. And then in 9th grade, I went to East Junior High. And we had 9th grade baseball, 10th grade, 9th grade football, basketball, all those sports. Mm-hmm. So we played against West Junior High. So we didn't like those guys. They didn't like us. And then we got to the high school, and of course we were teammates.
Yeah.
And so it was September of 1968. I'm a sophomore. And we're doing softball for Phi-Ed. And I was one of the better players because I played baseball, and the kid next to me was from West. He was one of the better players in this, you know, Phi-Ed class. And so we kind of became buddies, and he was telling me, he says, you know, I bat boy for the Twins on the visiting side every now and then as a substitute. And I love the Twins. I said, well, how'd you get that job? He said, I mowed Jim Cott's lawn. Jim Cott was a longtime, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. pitcher, should be in the Hall of Fame in my opinion, and he's a great announcer. And I said, well, that's pretty cool. So that was pretty much the end of it. And a couple weeks later, I was staying at a friend's house because my mom and dad were away out of town on work. And the phone rang. And, of course, there's no caller ID or no cell phones back then. So I'm going, well, this got to be my mom or dad because nobody else knows I'm staying at this place.
Yeah.
Well, it was a kid. Mike Dunn is his name. And Mike said, hey, you want to come down to bat boy for the last three games of this season for the Twins? The bat boy's got to go to college. I said, yeah, why'd you call me? He said, well, I called all my friends from West. Their mom won't let them out of school. I said, well, mine will. So I went down, worked 3 days, and the clubhouse guy, Jimmy Wiesner, liked me, and he said, say, I run the clubhouse for the Vikings, too. Do you want to work football games? So I started working as a ball boy and a water boy and, you know, catching field goals and punts and pregame and halftime, and I'm still there, actually. This is my 51st year there.
Well, 51 years, yeah, wow.
Our trainer, Joe Hofer, his father and I run the clubhouse. And we worked for Wiesner. Wiesner eventually came here and coached for me for 16, 17 years. He coached Patty Rydeen, and he passed away here about a year ago. He and Kaz real close to each other. But so that opened a bunch of doors for me, and one thing's led to another and just different opportunities. And I couldn't be a head high school coach. Back in the 90s, you couldn't be a head high school varsity coach unless you had a teaching certificate. And in 1993, Minnetonka called me and said, do you want the job? And I asked them, how are you going to do this? They said, we're just going to do it. It worked pretty good. We went to the state tournament 5 years in a row. Sent a bunch of kids off to college to play baseball. And in 98, my kids were coming. I had twin boys. And so I decided I'd step down because they're both pretty good players, and I wanted them to stand on their own 2 feet rather than saying the old man's the reason they're on varsity at a young age. Worked out pretty good for them. That summer, USA Baseball started a 16U program. Prior to that, they had an 18U, an Olympic team, and a college team. And they asked if I'd want to be the hitting coach, go over to Taiwan. It's a 31-day trip and, you know, be with USA Baseball. And right away it was, you know, why'd you call me? They said, well, we're trying to get some northern guys involved. It's a brand new program. The rest of the world does it from 12U to 14U to 16, 18 in the pro team. And that. Mm-hmm. And the United States Olympic Committee funded that. And so we went over there. I took the gig, and we went over to Taiwan, and we finished fifth in the world championship. And the USOC said that's not good enough. They said, really? If we're going to fund this, this is baseball. This is our game. If you can't at least win a medal, we don't think it's a viable way to produce Olympians and professional players.
Okay.
So they said, we'll try one more year. If you don't win a medal, then we'll just gas it and go back to the older program. So they gave me the team. They gave me two good coaches, and we went undefeated. And we were the USLC team of the year. We were the coaches of the year, and it changed my life. Like I say, I was a block layer and a laborer. Well, now all of a sudden I had teaching requests coming out of the sky. Mm-hmm. So long story short, about 2 years later, I had a business, and I had 21 guys teaching underneath me. One of them was Neil Lerner, who's now my associate head coach. And then in the fall of 99, Concordia calls out of nowhere. And it was Dan O'Brien was the AD here. Well, Dan O'Brien, not the same guy, was the CEO of USA Baseball. And now he had caller ID. So it's 10 o'clock at night, and the phone rings, and I'm not going to take it. It's too late. And Paulie, my son, said, Dad, it's Dan O'Brien. I said, well, give me the phone. I thought I had another national team. And I pick up the phone, and he says, hi, I'm Dan O'Brien. I'm the athletic director at Concordia University. We're going Division II. Would you like to be our coach? And I laughed, told him, I thought you were the CEO of USA Baseball. But I had to tell him I didn't have a degree. And he said, well, that's going to be an issue because 89% of our faculty and staff have PhDs. So he went to President Holtz, and President Holtz literally told him, Abe Lincoln didn't have a degree either. If you want to hire this guy, hire him. And so because of that, I don't go to theaters now. But he hired me. They gave me a great opportunity, and that's how I got to Concordia. So basically it was I took the job because I wanted to coach, and I was given an opportunity. And at that time, I really didn't know what we were getting into, but it's worked out pretty good. Long answer, but that's how I got to Concordia, all those different connections. I tell that story to a lot of the families that we recruit, give them the background on it. And you know, I like to say that I'm not steering my ship. I'm going along for God's opened a lot of doors for me, and I'm going along for the ride and trying not to screw it up. So I'm just doing the best I can. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would say you've had quite the ride. I mean, you've been at CSP for nearly two decades. How have you seen this university grow?
Well, Tom Kelly, the old Twins manager, comes out and helps me a lot. And my daughter's actually named after him. He came in the first year, and he asked the kids, what's your identity? And they, well, what do you mean? Well, what do they say about Concordia baseball when they talk about it? Well, they say we can hit. And he said, yeah, that is what they say, but you're not going to win championships if you can't pitch, you can't play defense, you can't run the bases. You know, hitting is just a piece of the game. And so a few weeks later, one of the kids said, Coach, what do you think Concordia's identity is? I said, well, I not only think that Concordia isn't a cool place to come, I think it might be kind of considered an uncool place to come. And not that cool is what we're about, but, you know, I'd come off coaching that U.S. national team and, you know, five straight state tournament teams, and we had 23 guys on our team, and about 14 of them hadn't started for their varsity. So it was pretty rough. And we played St. Thomas one day, and one of the guys, Matt Hanza, who was on the college national team, so I ran into him. We crossed paths at USA, came up to home plate, and when we were doing the ground rules, he said, Coach, how's this different from coaching that U.S. team? I said, well, Matty, I'm coaching them exactly the same way. So what that tells you is it doesn't matter what I know. You got to have some horses. Yeah. And then you got to get those horses to pull in the same direction. And so from that period to here, that's what we've been trying to do. The school itself has changed dramatically. I mean, the first dramatic change was the tuition reset. Mm-hmm. And I used to lose so many players to the MIAC, you know, Division III schools. But, you know, quite frankly, they in many areas they were better academically. Mm-hmm. We don't lose those battles anymore. The academic offerings here have changed so vastly. It's now a real creditable degree. We've got kids in med school, dental school, law school. I mean, you know, it's awesome what's going on here, and it's really exciting because with the addition of the academic offerings, now more athletic offerings. We've got eSport coming. We might have some more announcements coming down the road here. It's just a dynamic place to be. When I took the job, they the carrot they dangled in front of the coaches and even some people probably coming in to teach on the academic side was that, hey, we're the only D2 in the Twin City. The internship opportunities are going to be vast. It's going to be a great opportunity for your kids. And at first, that didn't make it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Now, where we've grown and where we are and where we're going, that is exactly what we've got to offer for these kids. A great opportunity, a great academic institution, great degree. We're graduating our kids. I'm proud of the fact that we had 52 or 53 fall academic all-conference. I mean, the year before, 44. The year before, like 32. We're just getting more really quality student athletes, kids that want to come here and get a degree. Where it's changed is when I first took this job, I wanted to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a baseball coach. I had no experience in college. I didn't go to college, and I had no experience. The academic side I knew was important, of course, but we've had to figure out that our job here is to recruit, retain, graduate, fundraise, and win games. Now, we still want to win games when we're on that field practicing and we're on that field playing, but this is an academic institution that provides an opportunity for kids to play Division II athletics, second highest level of athletics, amateur athletics in the country. And it's a great mix, and the kind of kids we're getting to sit in this office nowadays, it's incredible. The athletics average GPA, I've been told, is higher than the general student body average GPA.
Really?
And that's something we're really proud of. So it's changed in so many ways, but the exciting thing is that Dr. Lamont and President Reese and the administrators, they're not slowing down. You know, they're giving us opportunities. I mean, in our time here, we've been able to add a second sports information director who serves everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, we need that. We were able to add two more full-time trainers who serve everyone. Our strength and conditioning coaches, that area has improved vastly. They serve 350 athletes. Mm-hmm. So they've allowed us to make some wise decision that services everyone rather than me going and saying, I want this for the baseball program. Football wants this for the football program and right down the road. So the culture and the attitude have changed dramatically, and we're still rolling. I'm excited at what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that we're able to have these new avenues, like you said, a second SID, more athletic trainers, a strength and conditioning coach. How does that impact your role as athletic director? Or do you see, is that just like a building block where you see, okay, well, we got that. Well, now what can we get?
In one of my first meetings with Dr. Lamont after taking the job, I said to him, I think one of the strategic errors that we make is that in a lot of cases, fundraising and projects, we try to hit home runs. Mm-hmm. We're always trying to hit home runs. So we're trying to find some guy to give us $100,000. And I said it would make more sense to me to find 100 guys that can give you 1,000 or get 1,000 guys that can give you 100. And I used the term, I said, Eric, I think we should try to hit singles. Mm-hmm. And Eric has really grasped that. And he and his people are the decision makers. I'm not the decision maker in a lot of areas. They trust us to make decisions for this department, which is the biggest department in the university. But still, I'm not going to do anything on a large scale without running it by them first, mm-hmm. out of respect for them, and I don't want to be foolish. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't look at these things as huge, but having a second SID is huge.
Yep.
Having four full-time trainers instead of two is huge. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do it for any other reason than I thought it was the best thing for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. And they've trusted Reagan and I to make these decisions. And, yeah, we're looking forward to being able to make some more maybe before I'm done and then, you know, moving forward whoever they've replaced me with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Looking back on your time as AD, what are some of your fondest memories? Or do you have any stories that really stick out to you?
Well, I didn't apply for the job. I was on the committee, and about 6 weeks into it, we were narrowing it down to 7 people. And Dr. Lamont called me in his office and asked me if I would consider the job. And I said I didn't know because I didn't know. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it. I had no experience. It intrigued me. We were leaving for spring trip in Arizona the next day. And so I asked if I could talk to my coaches and my confidants and my family, and he said, yeah. So we did. And, I mean, one big thing is I asked Can I do both? And I'm not asking, may I do both? Can I do both and do justice to these? Because I don't want to go in and do a half job. I want to be able to do my job and do it well. So I requested that Reagan be named the associate AD and that my son Marcus, who was my assistant coach, be the associate head coach. Reagan knows things about legislation and compliance and things that I'm too far along to even learn. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there were certain areas that I could do well in, but it was going to have to be a team project. The business end of baseball, wouldn't have time to call all the recruits, to order the equipment, to plan the travel, to inventory the equipment, to just all of these types of practice plan. So I would need Marcus and the volunteer or stipend coaches to help out there. And the administration's allowed that to happen, so it went all good. And, my son Marcus took the visiting clubhouse job for the Twins last February. And so I was really doing two jobs. Mm-hmm. So now he was out of the office, and all my other coaches came down at 3:30 after their normal jobs. So that was that was a big struggle. Reagan took on a huge role here, picking me up a little bit on some other areas. But I don't think I have any funny stories, other than, there's a lot to it. It's a big responsibility. I love getting things done. I love seeing, things improve. And the administration has allowed us to do a lot of little things that have made a big difference. And we're still got some plans here for the summer. They're going to re-turf the football field. Well, it's not a football field, the stadium. It's a soccer and lacrosse field. And they're actually going to put all those lines on there. Tommy used to, and the crew used to have to paint those on. Now those will be permanent. We're looking into putting up some permanent bleachers on the visiting side as opposed to renting them for a lot of money and not having anything at the end of the year, just making wise decisions again. Dr. Lamont, stresses that if it's a need, let's talk about it. If it's a want, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. So just making practical decisions. We really worked hard on creating interdepartment collaboration with admissions, with financial aid, with academics, that just open an open dialogue to let everybody know that, hey, we're all in this together. We need all those people. And it's we're not on an island over here. We don't think we're special. Everybody just go about their business. I always say Babe Ruth died, they kept playing baseball. If Lunch McKenzie doesn't show up or Marcus McKenzie or Neil Lerner doesn't show up tomorrow, they're going to roll right on. Mm-hmm. So we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. We don't think too much of what our role is. We're just part of a team. It's all corny, but it's all true. Mm-hmm. And what I like is, as the AD, you're kind of coaching the coaches.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell Brady Starkey how to coach volleyball. But, as far as just the university in general, what we're trying to do as a department, and we just need everybody. We need everybody. We need the horses to pull the wagon.
Exactly.
In the same direction. Mm-hmm. Understanding that Joey James should be more concerned with his team than my team and vice versa. But there's also a whole department and a whole university that we're representing that are more important than our individual sports.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. So you already mentioned a little bit about the recruiting aspect with your baseball team. So when you're telling those kids, what makes CSP special or different from other schools in the NSIC or MIAC?
Well, our location is critical. The facility upgrades are really helping us. Mm-hmm. What Coach Lerner and I talk about, Coach Lerner was the dean of students at Hopkins West Junior High for 20 years. He comes from an academic background. He's got every degree there is to get. He's got a principal license from Concordia. Mm-hmm. He's teaching in the master's program, and he's now my associate head coach since my son Marcus left for the Twins. We care about these kids. We care about their academics. We care about them as a person. It's just developing relationships. It's what we call it is, I'm really going to get off track here. I had a buddy that I grew up with that went to Mankato State, got a degree in park and rec, and he worked for a park and rec department in Minnetonka for a while, hated it. So he became a Burger King assistant manager. And we were all living together, six guys, down at University of Minnesota. I wasn't going there. I just lived down there and played at Murals under a fake name. But anyhow, Charlie would come home from work, and he'd have these shirts on that said Whopper College. And we just were relentless. We just were merciless. We buried him about Whopper College. And we were playing a lot of baseball and slow-pitch softball in the summer. And we had We were actually, some of us were getting paid to play slow pitch softball. And we were winning regional tournaments and going to national tournaments and world tournaments. And so they'd fly you down to, you know, Florida so you could go down there and run around the beach, play some softball, and, you know, just have a gas. Well, Charlie decided he wasn't going to go to one of the world tournaments. And we thought he was nuts. We said, what, are you crazy? He said, I'm going to open up the first drive-through Burger King window in the state of Minnesota. It's over on, it's 394 now in Louisiana. It used to be Highway 12. We said, that's what you're going to do rather than go down to Florida and play softball in the world championship. Yes. Well, when Charlie retired as president of Häagen-Dazs Ice Cream and then president of Play It Again Sports, all owned by Pillsbury years later, we decided not to make fun of Wofford College anymore.
I would say so, yeah.
And so everything that he was involved in was a franchise. All these businesses were franchises. So I said to him, I want to know what makes you so good at this franchise business. What is franchise business? He said, it's good people meeting good people. He said, because good people don't hang with bad people in general. So if you're a good person and I'm a good person, and we come in contact, all of our sphere of friends mm-hmm. are in general good people. And so it can just spread. It can just spread. And that's what we've tried to develop here at Concordia in our recruiting process. In many ways, the kids recruit for us. Adam Hildebrand walked in here 5 years ago. I didn't know who he was from North St. Paul. Little tiny kid, and said, All-state soccer player, wants to play baseball. So I told him, great, we had a great visit. He's a great student. I let him walk on. About 4 days later, Bram Minzer, the shortstop on the team, came and said, I'd like to come too. He walked on. Then they told me they had a kid named Jake Steckler who was going to St. Mary's to play basketball, and the financial aid package fell through. Hadn't played baseball in a year. I went out and scouted him, tremendous athlete. We recruited Steck, and he came. Then they told me about this kid named Barland, and they said, you might want to go see him. So I went over, and I saw Gus pitch. He's throwing 83 miles an hour. It was in the fall, and we were able to sign Gus early. I'm convinced had we not signed Gus early, we wouldn't have got Gus. Mm-hmm. And then Gus told his little brother, who didn't want to come here. He wanted to pitch against Gus. He sent a letter. The story goes to every team in the conference. No one responded.
Really?
Gus continued to go home and show Louis what the coaches, Marcus and John Gobb, were teaching him as far as mechanics and just little drills and stuff. And he finally said, I want to drink the Kool-Aid I'm in. So he comes over and he comes here. Zach Lazan, who was the number one pitcher on their staff, went down to Indian Hills, I believe, to go to junior college, and he came back over spring winter break and said, what's going on here? You know, I was the dude. These guys are now throwing this. I want in.
Yeah.
And he came in. So my point is those kids helped me recruit all those other kids and okay. the experience that they had. So there's the first good person, mm-hmm. okay, and it leads to five or six other good people that want to come here, go to school, participate, and develop and get as good as they can get in all areas. We have a similar thing going on with Minnetonka now. I've had pockets there. We've got three kids coming from Illinois through USA connections, and they told each other, this is a good place to come. The coaches care about you. It's a great academic school. It's in the Twin Cities area. And so the recruiting end of it is just once we were able to get the right people in here, they told other people. When I first took this job, Tanner, I'd take any living, breathing creature that could play baseball and help me win baseball games. And it caused us a lot of pain off the field, okay? Mm-hmm. Kids weren't going to school. All they were doing was partying. You know, it wasn't good. And I'm not saying we wouldn't take an at-risk kid, but I'm not going to take five or six. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to now because the kids we're going out after are, in general, kids that our guys already know. And there's what kind of kid is he? You want him, coach. He's a great student, he's a good kid, comes from a good family, that type of thing. In that way, it's changed dramatically. I don't want to say that we're snooty because we're not, but we investigate the kids and we suggest that they investigate us. We tell every family, I would go ask people about us because I can tell you anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I can give you a spiel, sell you a used car here, but, you know, go out and ask about us because they're not going to lie to you. Talk to my players. They're not going to lie to you. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll tell you if we're backing up what we're saying. So, and I also tell them it's not a perfect place and I'm not a perfect man and we don't have a perfect coaching staff, but all three of my children have gotten degrees here now. Paul played baseball here on a championship. Kelly played two sports. Marcus pitched in Minnesota, but came over here, got his master's. And I always tell people I wouldn't screw my own kids up on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great place, and these are great degrees, and they all have great jobs. So mm-hmm. Concordia has served my family well, and hopefully it's serving the families that we recruit and bring in here, and it's going to serve them well.
For sure, for sure. How do you believe this athletic department will continue to thrive after your 10 years up in August? And are there any big plans between now and when you retire?
Well, the re-turfing the football stadium, and you know, that's 10 years old, and that turf has a life expectancy of about 10 years, so it's served its purpose for sure. So, I mean, getting that done, the e-sports, like I say, we're discussing possibly another sport or two. I don't know if that's going to lead to fruition or not. But, I mean, we're looking at putting a press box area out on the baseball field so that Patrick and Josh and Dan don't have to sit outside for 6 hours for a doubleheader and freeze and rain. And so, I mean, that's exciting. And, yeah, just some smaller things like that that we're just trying to do as much as we can to enhance everybody and staying within the budgetary restraints and raise a bunch of money and, yeah, just keep it rolling on. This place is going to roll on when Lunch McKenzie's gone, okay? I have a great staff here. We have a great support staff here. It's unbelievable. I was on Mike Max's show last night, and I explained to him about what Patty and Josh and guys like you do, the hours that people put in, that Tommy and Bob Bartel put in, Reagan. I mean, we'll have basketball till 9:30 tonight. We'll be back here again tomorrow. I mean, people want to get into athletics. It takes a ton of dedication. It takes an incredible family, spouse, or even your kids, because you're gone a lot. But I was gone a lot. All three of my kids reaped the harvest of Concordia mm-hmm. because my wife allowed me to come here and put in those long hours, and it's paid benefits beyond our wildest dream. I mean, I never imagined to be an athletic director, for gosh sakes. I shouldn't even be a head baseball coach here with no degree. So
definitely. So you've already said that you're still passionate about the game of baseball, and you plan on coaching after your retirement from athletic
Absolutely.
Director, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So how is the team shaping up this year?
Well, we think if we can stay healthy, we think we're going to have a pretty good club. You know, we're runner-up in the conference championship two out of the last 3 years. Maybe I should have taken this AD gig quicker. But maybe if I didn't, we would have won one of those. But, you know, we got beat by Augie in the finals last year by one run, and, of course, they went on to win the national title. We're graduating 18 kids. So we have a huge senior class. We signed 12 players, student-athletes, early, which is the largest recruiting class we've ever had early. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a testimony to what's going on here, not just in baseball. I mean, Concordia University itself, the university, the academic institution, is an attractive institution to come to now.
For sure.
And it's just made our life so much easier. But it's taken some time. You know, it's taken some time. But, you know, like I said, this place is going to roll right on, and they've got it going. Our leaders know what they're doing, and they're innovative, and they're creative, and they can take things like our pole barn facility was a maintenance shack. It's one of the top recruiting places. I take this kids in. It's a man cave where the guys can go in and do their work, get their work done, and it's a barn. You know, it's a barn that's got dirt floors, and we've thrown turf on top of it. It's nothing fancy, but it was creative. And when I show it to these kids, it's unbelievable. I got the idea from Notre Dame. When Paul Maneri, the LSU coach, was down there, I went down and visited him, and he showed me his indoor facilities. Of course, theirs is immaculate. It's not, doesn't have a dirt floor. But, I mean, I came back and asked President Holtz, can we have that maintenance shack? And they moved maintenance to another building. And then now you look what they did with the Performance Center. They took an existing mm-hmm. shell and turned that into a state-of-the-art center where we get kids walk in now and go, oh wow, this is nicer than this school, or this is nicer than this school. And they're talking about nice universities with beautiful facilities. I'm not going to mention names, but you know, prior to that, you know, the weight room wasn't very attractive. It was almost, you know, a little bit embarrassing, but it, you know, you can't build Rome in a day. It took 19 years, but boy, it was well worth the wait.
Earlier this year on the podcast, we had one of your former pitchers, Gus Varland, who now is a prospect for the Oakland Athletics. Do you follow his career much at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we stay in contact with Gus. He's still real close to the pitching coaches, especially Marcus and John Gobb. But yeah, one of the, we try to stay in contact with a lot of our guys, you know, off the field and stuff. And sometimes it's text or emails or just shooting stuff out on Facebook and stuff, following guys and things. But I mean, yeah, Gus is a, he's a great success story. You know, he came in and he worked hard. We've, I mean, from where we started, you know, the background I told you, where we hardly had very many guys even played for their varsity. We've had 18 guys sign professional contracts, which means we've had 18 guys come in here that weren't good enough to play for the Gophers, and they left, they were good enough to play for the Twins. We always tell our recruits, so we don't get them signed. You know, I didn't get Gus signed. We didn't do, I didn't do one line drill to straighten out his mechanics. I didn't lift a weight. I didn't go to school for him. You know, we didn't stay out of trouble off the field for him. What these kids do when they reach their full potential and beyond is they're doing the work. I didn't make Patrick a sports information director. I didn't go to school for him, okay? I'm not going to take credit for that, okay? We take credit for the fact that we were able to recruit him and bring him in and, you know, allow him to play baseball for 4 years and end up doing something that he wants to do. We take great pride in that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, there's way more beyond this than baseball, but it's pretty exciting when you see kids come in here throwing 83 and they leave here and they're sitting at 94 and they're hitting 97. That's incredible.
For sure.
And to me, it was always in those kids. It was just the D1 animal is interesting because they can afford to just go get the guy that can already do it. He's got the tools. He can do this. And at D2, if we can look at a kid and go, boy, I don't know, if this kid wants to do the work and wants to get in that weight room and do some mechanical work, I think it's in there. You know, we had a kid named Brian Lippincott here who was a 19th round pick. He had one home run in high school, one home run in 3 years of high school. And his first game here, he had a walk-off home run over the baggie in the Metrodome. And he went to work with one simple drill and turned himself into a national batting champion, a 19th round pick. And all along the way, he was the academic All-American of the Year in the entire NCAA.
Really?
As well as being an academic All-American of the Year in baseball twice.
Wow.
And even, I'm getting off track here, but Lippincott, we have study table. We have study table for our players one day a week. And it's mandatory if you're under a 3.0 or you're a new student. If you're a new student, you come in first semester, you're over 3.0, you're out. Lippincott was a straight 4.0 the whole 4 years. He went to study table every single week because he had to study anyhow. So he just went in there and studied, and then he ended up helping some of them, you know, tutoring guys and things.
Yeah.
And he kind of taught people it was cool to go to school. You can be a jock, you can be a great athlete, and go to school. And now he's out, you know, he's playing career done, but he's met his wife here. He's got a beautiful family, and he's working in finance, which was his degree, and he's killing it. So
that's awesome.
You know, yeah, and that, you know, that's another side of the competitive side of sports. Can teach you to compete out there in that market, too, because that market out there is a little tougher than a baseball game, I'll tell you.
Yeah. For sure, for sure. So what was the draft process for Gus like from your perspective? I know I talked to him on the podcast about what it was like for him, but how do you play a role in that?
We stay out of the way.
Okay.
Be frank with you. We have a pretty solid relationship with the scouts. You know, I've been with USA Baseball 23 years now. Marcus played some professional baseball, and he works for the Twins. John Gobb pitched in the big leagues, you know, in a brief stint with the Cubs in the major leagues. So we're pretty well connected. And they can call us and ask us a question, and we're going to give them an honest answer. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. We can ask them some questions. But, I mean, you never know. I mean, those, you know, Gus isn't a big guy. What is he, 5'11", maybe 6 feet? And his arm works tremendously well. He rushed himself a little bit. There were some people concerned that, you know, I don't know if that's going to work at a higher level, though his motion was quick. And those scouts sometimes are cautious to put their name behind a Division II kid and spend a 10th-round pick or a 14th-round pick on him. And then not have him pan out. So, I mean, it's a long process. They come and see this kid multiple times. They watch him from the time he gets off that bus, how he interacts with his teammates, how he interacts with his coaches. They take psychology tests. They ask him some of the strangest questions. And the coaches or the scouts just say at lunch, just tell him to do, just answer the questions. I can't even give it back to my guy. I can't give it back to my director if he doesn't answer it. So it's kind of like Herb Brooks in the movie Miracle. You know, Craig wouldn't take the dang test. But In this case, you have to take the test or they're not going to come after you. And I talked to Terry Ryan, who's with the Phillies, you know, former Twins GM, and he was expecting Gus to go in the top 10. In fact, he was a little upset that the Phillies didn't take him. And in the 10th round, I guess someone said, what about Varland? And Terry said, yeah, let's go. But, you know, then someone else is there and someone else is there. But, boy, the A's seem like they got a good one. And he's, you know, he's so focused and working so hard. He wants to be a teacher.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Gus wants to be a teacher. At our baseball banquet, the kids all get up and introduce themselves and tell us what their major is and such. And last year he got up and everybody knew he had a chance to get drafted, and they knew he was possibly the preseason pitcher of the year, going to, you know, win the thing, be All-American. He never mentioned a thing about that other than the fact he was a right-handed pitcher. He says, I want to be a teacher because Coach Lerner has influenced me on the education side. I mean, that's what's cool, because baseball is going to end someday.
For sure.
You know, and I know most of my constituents at USA were high draft picks, the guys I'm coaching with, when we go do those teams and pick those teams. And most of them are high school baseball coaches. Okay, so, that, you know, played in the big leagues or were number one picks and made it to AAA and did all these things, tremendous college players, and they're high school baseball coaches. So, you know, there's life after baseball. There's life after sports. And, you know, if you're making Mike Trout money, you know, it's a little bit different. But if you're the normal dude, you know, but Gus Stein got some dough, but that's not money for – that's not life-changing money. You know, there's you got to have a plan. Yeah. And I believe Gus has a plan and a backup plan.
That's good to hear. Because I know having on the podcast, it was a blast. I've talked to him a little bit, and he's a great dude. So it's good to hear he's doing well.
Comes from a blue-collar family. His aunt, Tom Rebelke, my predecessor, told me that his aunt was an unbelievable softball player here.
Oh, she played here?
Yeah, played at Concordia. And I don't know if she played for Rubes or not, but then the mom and dad were good athletes. The dad played ball, you know, up until he was too old to play ball.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, they come from I think he's a sheetrocker, and they're hardworking kids, and they're hardworking blue-collar people, and they're wonderful. They're just it's a wonderful family. They don't take anything for granted. They're very grateful for every opportunity they've been given.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome to hear. Recently, the athletic department announced that they'll be adding an esports program to the athletic department. What will that be like, and can you provide any more input on that?
Well, Reagan's been spearheading that from the start, but we've been looking into it for over a year, and it's blowing up. The sport is blowing up, and a lot of people laugh about it and say, you're going to do strength and conditioning, you're going to do drug testing. You know, we're learning from things from this area, but they do have a compliance manual. It is going to be treated. There's going to be standards. They're going to have to take the ACT. They're going to have to meet eligibility, you know, requirements, and they're going to have to maintain their GPA just like a student athlete does, or they'll become ineligible for the team. Reagan spoke a lot with the people from Ashland, which is a small school in Ohio, and she, you know, we're trying to do a business model and do projections as to how many student athletes this could possibly bring in. And the man that the AD on there said, look, we're a little town in Ohio, and we've got 40 people. You're in the Twin Cities. You're going to have no problem fielding a team of 40 or whatever. And to be honest with you, Tanner, I don't even know how many kids are on a roster. I don't know what our capabilities are as far as the facilities, because they are building a classroom in the LMC right above the baseball and lacrosse and softball locker rooms. And there's going to be a viewing area, and they're full-time coach. That, you know, they're tying it in with computer science. I mean, it's Patty could probably speak to this. They had like 1,200 hits on that thing once we announced it in like a week or 2 weeks or something more. I mean, four times more than anything we've ever put out. And so it's a growing area, and it's exciting. I'm excited to learn, to kind of sit back and watch and learn. But Reagan could give you a better answer as far as the details and everything that goes into it.
Definitely. I know I'm curious and excited to see what it looks like.
Yeah, we all are.
What year is it going to be here?
Next fall.
Next fall already?
Yeah, next fall, 2009, fall of 2019.
Okay. Yep,
that's the plan.
Okay.
That's the plan. And so there'll be some construction over the summer as far as, you know, building the chairs and the room where they practice and they play. And, you know, it's an interesting concept, too, because it falls under athletics. But like I say, it's tied into computer science. There's no travel involved. You know, so there's no meals involved. So as far as the expenses go, you know, we'll probably provide them with some sweatshirts and things like that. But it's relatively inexpensive, and it's exciting. It's fun. You know, they're going to carefully look and see what type of games they're going to play, whether they're going to be athletic games or, you know, they're not going to want all these real violent games and these types of things. But the other cool thing about it is there's no divisions. There's no division 1, 2, or 3. So we can play, we can compete against Harvard or Notre Dame or USC. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting that Minnesota's the first esports program in the state of Minnesota. Yep. Is that correct?
Yep. That and lacrosse. Lacrosse was in the whole 5-state area. And that just goes back to what our leaders are doing. It's just on the academic side and the athletic side. And, you know, I'm sure they're doing similar things in the arts and music. And they're all important, you know. So our leadership is great, and they're innovative, and they're creative, and they're supportive. And, yeah, it's cool. It's exciting to be here right now. I'll tell you, I'm stepping down as the AD. Why would I be leaving? But I mean, it's exciting to be here, and that's why I'm not leaving. That's why I plan on staying with that baseball program until I can't provide, you know, a service on that field. So Neil and I have been together. This will be our 13th season.
Okay.
So I mean, he and I have been running that program, you know, all this time. He was with me my first 5 years, then went to Hopkins, was a head coach there for 8 years, and then came back here, got his principal license, been with me ever since, and he just stepped down from that position of high seniority to come here, and he took a pay cut. I'll just say that. He was at the top of his you know, profession, and that speaks volumes too.
Yeah.
You know, he's a young man with a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old, very supportive wife and family, and That's just a testimony as to what's going on here, because he wants to be a part of it and his family wants to be a part of it too. It's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. I know something special is brewing up at CSP for sure.
I had a recruit in from Colorado that recruited us, and he committed. He came in here about 2 months ago, and the dad said, there is a buzz about this place going on out there. And I said, you mean the baseball program? He said, well, that too. But the Concordia in general, there is a buzz in the community out there as to what is going on around here. And I said, well, I shared that with Eric and some other people. That's exciting to hear. And then sure enough, he committed. And so it's
that's awesome.
Good stuff.
For sure. So reflecting on your time as AD, what will you miss most?
The people. Mm-hmm. I might sound like a real jerk here. When I was offered the position, we came back from the spring trip, and I went to meet with Dr. Lamott and tell him I decided to accept it. And he called the human resources people in, I was asked, what makes you think you can do this? And fair question. And I just said, because I'm a leader. Mm-hmm. I've been coaching since I was 15, and I've learned to lead, and that doesn't mean you're a big shot. It's just, somebody needs to lead and somebody needs to follow. I can't lead if someone won't follow. Okay. And a person can't follow unless someone won't lead. And I just enjoy having a say in things that can make Concordia better and being a part of something. It's just the relationships and the people. And that's why I'm going to stick around and do the baseball side of it. I won't have to come to every football game. I won't have to come to every basketball game and volleyball game. You know, there's some areas here that I can step back and, you know, take it a little easier, because it's been a lot, but it's one of the greatest opportunities I've ever had in my life, and I'm grateful for it, and I thank God every day. I drive by scaffolds and say prayers, man. I'm not up there laying block in the winter. Mm-hmm. I get to come in here and work with young people. You know, Mike Max asked me last night, does working with young people keep you young? No, it doesn't keep you young, but you have to be able to think young. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to be able to relate to 18 to 22-year-olds and hopefully not bore them and throw my experience and that at them. It's just, what can I do to assist them? Because I've had a ton of people help me. I've had a ton of people help me along the way, open doors for me and give me opportunities. So just helping people, just helping people move up and get an opportunity that they may not have had, or they would have had to leave somewhere. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
For sure.
I'll miss it, but I'm going to be around. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just stepping aside from this, going to let someone else run the show, and I'll get out of the way and pull for them.
Sounds good. Well, Lunch, I think that's all I've really got for you. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, and best of luck this season.
Well, I rambled there, so I hope I didn't bore everybody too bad, but I appreciate you having me on, Tanner.
That was awesome.
You're doing a great job. Hey, you're graduating tomorrow, man, or
thank
this
you.
Weekend.
I appreciate
congratulations
it.
And good luck.
Thank you. Rounding out this weekend in Golden Bear Athletics, tonight we have double the fun with Golden Bear Basketball. The men's and women's team will face off against the Peacocks of Upper Iowa. The women tip off at 5:30, and the men tip off at 7:30. There'll be free Chick-fil-A, so go and get some of that. You know I'll be there. Tomorrow, more basketball, as both the men and the women play host to Winona State. The women tip off at 3:30, and the men tip off at 5:30. Be there or be square, Golden Bears. Before we get into Athletes of the Week, I want to give a quick shout-out to football players Jonah Schenderlein, Marcus Haskins, and Chris Garrett for all of their exciting accolades for this past season. They've gathered up a few All-American honors, as well as some individual awards as well. Keep up the good work, fellas. This week's Athletes of the Week are seniors Anna Schmidt of the women's basketball team and Nasro Wadu of the track and field program. Schmidt averaged 21.5 points, 4 steals, 3 rebounds. Oh, sorry about that. 4 assists, 3 rebounds, and a steal in a road split at Southwest Minnesota State in Sioux Falls. She scored 19 of her 26 points in a second-half comeback win over SMSU. She is now second in CSP with 1,680 points. Wadu, or Nas, as he's known on campus, broke a school record for the weight throw at the Chuck Peterson Open with a huck of 56 feet and 5.25 inches. He placed second in the event and now ranks 25th in Division II and 4th in the NSIC in the weight throw. That's all I've got for you today, Golden Bears. Good luck to all the CSP athletes competing this weekend. See ya!